Welcome back to Flex Your Head, another special episode of Scream Therapy. On Flex Your Head, we take a breather from punk rock and mental health and explore classic punk albums, which I guess is good for mental health. All right, and we're back. Flex Your Head once again. And I've got Mike Isaacson. Mike, you were here way back when, years ago, when we first started doing this Flex Your Head.
Been a while.
Special episodes. Yeah, we did No Means No twice.
Yeah, twice. And Husker Du.
Husker Du, that's right.
Today we're returning to Minneapolis.
That's right. Back to Minnie. Yeah, so what album are we talking about today?
The Replacements, Let It Be.
All right, Let It Be by The Replacements. That's their third studio album, and it was released in 1984 on Twin Tone Records. As we talked about earlier, they are from Minneapolis, and I don't know, would you call them rock or punk or indie wasn't a term back then, but...
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think essentially they're a rock band that started off fairly punk, but, you know, kind of truly found their form when they were... like kind of the ultimate American bar rock band, really.
Yeah, my favorite kind of music. No, not at all, but these guys are break the mold. So the members of the band are Chris Marrs played drums, Bob Stinson was on lead guitar, Tommy Stinson, his younger brother, was on bass, and Paul Westerberg, of course, kind of the main part of this band, especially later on after this album, on vocals, rhythm guitar, piano, mandolin, electric guitar, lap steel, percussion, et cetera, et cetera. The album was produced partly by Westerberg and also by Peter Jesperson, who's one of the co-owners of Twin Tone, the label, and also Steve Felshtad. Let's start with your opening thoughts. What do you think of the album?
I'm 52 now. This album, I remember getting the cassette when I was 16, and it blew me away. So, you know, it's been a favorite ever since then. Yeah, I've been listening to it a lot the last few weeks getting ready for this, and it still holds up so well. There are no bad songs on this album, just fantastic. It's them coming from their earlier punkier days, you know, there's still a taste of that. Gets into kind of the more sentimental side of the band, where maybe they got a little overly sentimental in some of the later albums. This and the next album, Tim, are like kind of the perfect blend of all of that. Like they're two just fantastic albums.
Just that tipping point of being too saccharine versus not being too snotty, I guess, in the earlier stuff. This record comes in and out, you know, of my life over the years. I only got into it probably in my 20s. I wasn't into it as a teenager. You know, some of those albums that you have where you want to hear certain songs and then you kind of skip past, I don't think I ever really spent any time with some of these songs. And I also had a Replacements Greatest Hits album that only had four of these songs this album. So they got spun a lot. And everybody knows their songs like Bastards of Young and Alex Chilton, which came later on. But this is the album that I think they're really on top of what they're doing. And it kind of falls perfectly between the punk start of their band, the really kind of snotty, let's throw bottles at a wall kind of style punk, versus now going into... I guess you could call them an indie rock band.
Yeah, for sure, by the end.
In some ways, spearheaded that whole style. So this is the sweet spot. I don't know that anybody else really did it as well as they did in this pocket. You know, there's other bands that play the similar style of music, but not like this.
Yeah, no one I can think of. They're unique. I don't know what was in the water in Minneapolis, like the late 70s and early 80s, but my God, to have like Husker Du and The Replacements and Prince... and The Time, and, you know, it's Soul Asylum, and then Hold Steady. I mean, so much came out of, like, a pretty small town, relatively speaking.
Yeah, and they have a pretty good pop-punk scene still, and punk scene bands like these kind of set the tone for that. I keep reading about the whole idea of coming of age, and I think for me, these songs are they could apply to anybody. I mean, Androgynous, Answering Machine, we'll talk about the songs later on. You know, some are goofy, like, you know, I'm a teenager and I'm going to be an adult soon. Songs that were kind of left over maybe from older stuff.
I think Westerberg was like 21 or so when this album came out, but Tommy Stinson, how old was he when this came out? Like, he was like 15 or 16, probably. Like, he was 11 when they all started playing together. Yeah. And, you know, a song like 16 Blue, well, you know, Westerberg's writing that song with like a 16-year-old in the band, you know? So maybe some of that coming of age stuff was sort of written for Tommy, you know?
I would never think that these guys were in their late teens, early 20s listening to this. I can't believe that. I know bands that are that age that I could never imagine them being. But then it's the same thing with like a thrash metal band, you know, like Death Angel. They are like, you know, in their early teens when they started and they were so amazing. But it feels like he's got a lot of life experience at such a long, young age. And later on, he, you know, he had that. But earlier, it's like, how do you find that when you're just coming of age?
Certainly at the time, a lot of people were calling him the greatest songwriter in America, and he's still got that reputation as one of the greatest of all time, and it's well-deserved. I mean, he's written so many great, great songs.
Actually, I'll throw out a quote here from Colin Meloy, who wrote a 33 and a third series on this album. He said, "I listened to Let It Be endlessly. The record seemed to encapsulate perfectly all the feelings that were churning inside of me. Westerberg's weary voice sounded from my boombox, and I trembled to think that here I was, 13, and the hardest age was still 3 years in the making."
But, you know, this time, like, none of these guys finished high school. But Westerberg was working as a janitor. Bob Stinson was a short order cook. Tommy Stinson was a kid. I mean, I think he was well on his way to jail if his brother Bob hadn't handed him a bass guitar when he was 11. Yeah.
So let's get into some of the songs. Anything that really grabs you, things that maybe don't seem like they fit? I got a couple ideas on that one.
I like all of them. I mean, the original one that still to the day really blows me away is Unsatisfied. That's a fantastic song, but I love the whole album. I mean, I Will Dare, fantastic song to, you know, to kick things off. There's some songs that you could say are sort of filler, but they're still really good. Black Diamond, Senior Video. I mean, it's a 33-minute album, but it's all good. I like every song on it.
I was driving yesterday and listening to Unsatisfied, and I kind of thought, hey, this could easily have been the Every Rose Has Its Thorn. You know, if they were kind of marketed differently or something, it has a real, like, ballad punch to the gut sort of feel to it.
The funny thing with this, so I remember, you know, being a big Replacements fan in my late teens and seeing Paul Westerberg talk about this young band that they were touring with that he really liked, and they were called the Goo Goo Dolls. And the Goo Goo Dolls toured with them, and Westerberg even wrote some lyrics for them. And, you know, I've never really got into the Goo Goo Dolls, but kind of going through all this, and then I listened back to that Iris song. And I give up forever to
feel me somehow. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever be, and I don't wanna go home right now. And all I could taste is this moment, and all I can breathe is your life.
And that really, in a lot of ways, is kind of taking a Paul Westerberg ballad and making it a commercial smash. And that song is huge. That's one of the biggest songs of all time. Like, yeah. You don't realize, but it's like, it's in like the top 100 or top 50 all-time streamed songs on Spotify. And it's really just adding a commercial twist to what the Replacements are doing, and kind of, honestly, kind of dumbing it down, you know, and taking out the raw emotion of it. Not to totally slag on, you know, what the Goo Goo Dolls were doing, but
well, I bet you he's a lot more open to having inspired the Goo Goo Dolls and Poison.
Yeah.
Some of these songs do have that kind of grander radio ballad, you know, Answering Machine, yeah. And androgynous.
Oh, yeah. And you know that's what was killing all the music executives that had to deal with the Replacements, was just like, oh my God, why can't you guys just come up with that big hit? You're so close.
And maybe that was the charm of them, was that they weren't able to get there. They wanted to keep doing almost self-sabotaging.
That's the story of the Replacements, is they're the great band that just, yeah, self-sabotaged and kept shooting themselves in the foot. But it's like, you know, so what would have happened if they had become massive, if they'd have become Nirvana? I think at least one, if not more of them, wouldn't have made it even to the 27 Club, I would guess. You know, if they'd gotten that big.
Yeah.
Because those guys were out of control. They were way out of control. Like Twin Tone, they rented an RV for them to go on tour with so that they could have like a nicer time on the road. They ripped it apart. They threw the toilet out on the highway. They had no self-control whatsoever. They were drunken, raving lunatics that were an amazing band. But if they had become like Billboard top 10 act, man, I don't think they'd have made it, you know? Bob Stinson did, and he had a tragic life and only lasted till about 35. But I don't see them as being a failure. I mean, they were who they were, you know. And hey, Tommy got to play in Guns N' Roses after.
There you go. Yeah, he did. He made it. And Paul Westerberg got to write songs for the single soundtrack.
That's right.
Yeah, even though he had nothing to do with the Pacific Northwest grunge scene.
Exactly. Yes. He had minor success as a solo artist afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah, what I like about the songs on the album is just how it does blend those kind of lovely sort of heartbreaking songs with some really goofy stuff. Tommy gets his tonsils out and Gary's got a boner, like these two kind of goofball rocks. But there's also these like really good straight ahead punks, I guess you call them punk, or like really powerful punch songs, like I Will Dare, of course, but mm-hmm. We're Coming Out. Like We're Coming Out is probably one of my favorite songs.
Oh yeah, it's great.
It's just like, where did that go? It went into Bastards of Young. It went into Alex Chilton, but it never, that was the song that kind of was that real go-between. Like, it was the best punk song they wrote, and mm-hmm. It was the best post-punk song they wrote.
Yeah, and it's also Bob Stinson's finest moment on the album, too, like his solo on that, because this was kind of, you know, I mean, the less punk songs didn't suit him so well.
No.
And even, like, you know, the first song, I Will Dare, that's not, you can sort of hear, like, he did record a solo for that album. But it's actually Peter Buck from REM playing the solo.
Yeah.
You kind of hear Stinson's solo underneath it. But Peter Buck, who initially was maybe going to produce this album, but they didn't quite have things together in time.
Yeah.
He did come in and play that for them. So, yeah, Stinson was essentially starting to get pushed out the door at this point. But, yeah, and We're Coming Out, that solo is fantastic.
Thank you.
one more chance to get it all wrong.
I love the little breakdown near the end too. It turns into like a little shanty of sorts. And I listened to one of the live albums. It's one of the official ones. And I was ready for just a complete mess. But it's actually really, really good. I know they had shows where they were horrible and they had shows where they were just amazing, life-changing shows. This particular one, it's called For Sale Live at Maxwell's, which is in Hoboken. And they played, I think it was like maybe 30 songs or something on the album. And then, they throw in some covers. But speaking of covers, actually maybe my favorite song on the album is Black Diamond, which is a Kiss cover. Written by Paul Stanley. And I always thought actually that it was a replacement song because I'm not super down on the whole Kiss back catalog. Like Black Diamond's a bit of a deep track, I guess, but
I'm not a Kiss fan at all, but I do love Black Diamond. Their version is better than Kiss's, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Andrew Mile.
100%.
Yeah, I don't like Kiss. I like Detroit Rock City. That's a tune. But I love Black Diamond. It's great.
It's funny because I listened to the original one, and we'll put a clip in. Out on the street for a living, pictures only begun.
Got you under their thumb. Hit it!
Paul Stanley just sounds so pouty on it.
Yeah, I know.
Any lyrics that stand out for you?
Androgynous is a beautiful song. And I mean, if you could say like prescient, I mean, and it's funny too, like hearing the story of that, it was Westerberg. And I think with Tommy, they're both like putting makeup on in a women's bathroom, getting ready for a show. And there was a woman in the bathroom said something about androgynous. And Westerberg is like, what's that word? What does that mean? So it was actually his exploration of the meaning of the word that led to the writing of this beautiful song, just about equality. And to have written that in 1984, there's one that maybe if that had come out 30 or 40 years later, he could have had his big hit.
Here comes Dick, he's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane, you know she's sporting a chain. Same hair, evolution. Same build, evolution. Tomorrow, who's gonna fuss? And they love each other so. Androgynous. Closer than you know. Love each other so.
It's almost like he jumped ahead 30 years.
Yeah, totally.
Looked at what identity and gender looks like now. And
thinking about Dick and Jane.
Almost predicting the future. I'll actually read some of it.
Yeah.
And see how it applies to trans rights and queer identity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mirror image, see no damage, see no evil at all. Cupid dolls and urine stalls will be laughed at the way you're laughed at now. Now, something meets boy and something meets girl. They both look the same. They're overjoyed in this world. Same hair revolution, unisex evolution. Tomorrow, who's going to fuss? Closer than you know, love each other so, androgynous.
Yeah.
Wow. Gives me shivers.
That's fantastic.
So good.
Especially for a guy that, you know, was like, could be just so crass, and you heard the stories about them at the time, to write something so sensitive about a subject that, you know,
wasn't being talked about at that point. Like even hinting at the, talking about the bathroom stalls, like that has been the big issue over the last, 15 years or so, or 20 years about trans rights. So, the bathroom, gender neutral bathrooms. And
Absolutely.
He said it right there. Wow. Pretty cool.
He's a great songwriter. Unsatisfied. It's interesting. Obviously, choosing Let It Be as the album title, which they say was just because they decided, you know, whatever the next song on the radio is, we're going to name it after that. And that seems to have been repeated. So I guess that's true. Peter Jesperson, the manager, was a huge Beatles fan. So it was kind of, you know, having some fun with him too. But I think it's kind of interesting that you've got, you know, Let It Be as the album title, and then you got this song Unsatisfied, which, you know, to me conjures up, I can't get no satisfaction. The Replacements, they didn't see anything as sacred, and the, you know, the Beatles or the Stones or whatever were just, they were rock bands that came before them. Because I don't think Unsatisfied was a direct response to I Can't Get No Satisfaction, but, you know.
Out of all the songs on the album, and it's got a couple other crushers, but this is the one that really... really wants you to lay in the fetal position.
They really floored me. I can remember sitting in my bedroom with my Walkman on at 16 and hearing him belt it out on that one.
I read an interview, actually a really old one from back in the 80s, where the interviewer said to Westberg, you know, there's no such word as unsatisfied. And he replied, guess we're diseducated. The smartass.
Answering Machine, I love. I think that's one of the best songs about technology. How do you say goodnight to an answering machine?
Yeah.
You know, when you just have this one little machine to worry about, well before the era of social media and chatbots and everything that kids and everyone else are dealing with now.
Another one that's totally prophetic.
Absolutely.
Maybe he's the prophet. Maybe Westerberg is the prophet.
Yeah, maybe we should start a new religion, yeah. A replacement religion.
Couldn't find our prophet, and now we've found him. Talking about the name choice that you alluded to there, this is probably about 20 years ago, so maybe fairly reliable, but Westerberg said that we were going to call the album Whistler's Mommy, and then we decided to call it Stunk. I guess a reference to their Stink EP. Then we decided that the next song that came on the radio was going to be the album title. And the next thing that comes on the radio is When I Find Myself in Times of Trouble. So there you go. Let It Be. That's how it came.
They were going to call Tim Let It Bleed as well.
Oh, really? Yeah, that would have been great. The thing about this band is, I don't know, do you think they're a love it or hate it kind of a band? Because I have a friend who was just like, I don't get that band. And I have other people that are super into them. Some people just don't even really, doesn't register for them, but is it one of those bands that's really like either love them or you hate them?
I guess so. I mean, I don't know if I know anybody that hates them. I was surprised. Like, we were driving around yesterday, and yeah, I was talking with my girlfriend about it, and huge music fan herself. And I figured that she'd be a fan of the Replacements, and she's not. And I was trying to think, God, there's going to be like one song I can play for her that'll convince her. But, you know, she'd actually heard most of them already, and it's just, it doesn't resonate.
Yeah.
As much as they might be sort of, again, seen as kind of underachievers. I mean, critically, they weren't, you know. Let It Be is on all kinds of all-time top album lists.
Yeah.
And Tim as well. I don't know. I guess I always kind of had a sense that anyone that was really into music from that time would be a Replacements fan. But yeah, that's, I guess not. You
know? I think they're amazing. Maybe there's some part of that's too, sounds weird to say, but kind of simple and like, you know, like not stupid. Mm-hmm. I just mean a bit like kind of dulled down, or it's kind of that one of those bands that like, if you think too hard on, they're not a musician's band. Let's put it that way.
No, I mean, they could really play, but no, that's true. I mean, and they were drunk, you know, they were always drunk. So that's going to dumb things down. You know?
Yeah.
I kind of think of them and it's like, you know, I mean, you and I, we've known lots of bands. And you can kind of think of like any group of like talented teenage, early 20s bands that you can remember. And they're like, wow, you know, these kids are really good. They were like that. And you know, the bands I'm thinking of were pretty out of control. And they're like that. It's just that they are touched by that extra something special, you know, Westerberg's songwriting ability. And very talented too. I mean, often it is just kind of that, like how to Bob Mould and Grant Hart end up meeting up. So it's just kind of, you know, the right group of people coming together that just elevated them above, you know, a lot of potentially really similar bands, but they just have that extra something in there, you know.
Is this their best album?
This or Tim. I'm fine with either. I don't think there's a bad song on either album.
Yeah.
This one's a bit more raw, a bit more punk. Tim starts getting a bit more polished to where, like, where they ended up in the end. But I think they're both just fantastic albums that I can listen to over and over again. Yeah.
Want to do some YouTube reviews?
Sure.
This one's from @Conjo0, and it was posted 11 months ago. They just say, I'm a massive Beatles fan, but this was my favorite album called Let It Be. That's the easy one. I'm sure that's a comment that is all over the internet about that album. This is one about Black Diamond. So @DouglasRidgeway4181 posted this 7 months ago. This cover of Black Diamond reveals just how irrelevant Kiss was in 1984, and that Kiss should have just remained that way because of how great this version is compared to the 1974 album version. Sucky corporate shills will always be revealed in the end. Always remain unsatisfied. That was more a slam on Kiss than anything.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. And we should note, too, that, like, The Replacements putting a Kiss cover on an album in 1984 was, like, very much a piss take, and that would not have been a cool thing to do for, like, a punk supposed band at the time. But The Replacements were great at saying fuck you to everybody. So that was what they did best in some ways.
Another comment here from @MikaNoName. 3 months ago. These are actually pretty recent postings, so people are still caring about this. They said, non-binary anthem from way back where there was less awareness. I listened to this 25 years ago and really related. So that's cool. And the last one here is from @BobbyDeGroot7447. And this is actually posted 5 days ago. Okay. They say, I have to get my prostate removed, and Tommy got his tonsils out is the first thing I thought of. Paraphrased, Bobby got his prostate out. Pretty cool. So what are your final thoughts on the album?
It's just interesting. The Replacements were as good of music as you could get around this time, and that's now just over 40 years ago. It's impossible to imagine something like that now, and that's just kind of a sad thing, you know. They were out of control, but they were having a good time, and they were bringing a lot of people along with them, and you can still have a good time listening to them now.
All right, just a reminder to listen to the Scream Therapy podcast, which is at screamtherapyhq.com, and there's 130 episodes now of the Punk Rock and Mental Health podcast, and there's about 20 or so of these Flex Your Head podcasts. Mike, thank you so much for talking to me about this album.
Absolutely.
Take care.
You too.
Flex your head!
Hello there, listeners. This is Connor from the music department here at CJSF 90.1 FM, just chiming in to say thank you for listening to CJSF.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby.